Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Welcome, Prepping Academy podcast followers. Thank you for joining us today. What a great interview I have for you guys today. It's going to be broken into two parts because I just wouldn't stop asking questions. And I'm interviewing Selko Bagovic. He is a Bosnia War expert in HTF. He lived through some of the worst times and the Bosnian War with his family of 13. I go through every question I can think of. Some of my fellow PrepperNet members submitted questions, and I peppered him with questions for almost 2 hours. So I'm breaking this up into a two-part series. So today you're going to get part one, and make sure you catch us next week where we release part two of this incredible interview. Not really the interviewee, it's the interviewee. Selko is he's just great wisdom. So hope you guys enjoy this, and you guys take care.
Survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Hey, welcome PrepperNet members and Prepping Academy podcast members. Thank you so much for joining us today. Another special guest. I have so much respect for this gentleman. I interviewed him last year, and the reviews and the comments and the feedback I got from the listeners have been really amazing. One of my top fastest growing podcast for sure. And so we have Selko Bagovic. He is, I labeled him, and maybe other people have labeled him this, I'm not sure. He's an SHTF expert. He's been there, done that. And there's people around the world that have been through this, but they don't share like Selko does, that can help us understand what was going on over there, what could possibly go on here in America or wherever you live. But without further ado, I would like to welcome Selko. Selko, thank you so much for joining me again. That means I didn't do such a bad job the first time.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me again here for a second time. It is good to be here again. And I want you also to say hello to your listeners and hello to all those guys who did ask and who will ask questions for me.
Yeah, so we have a list of questions. So in the PrepperNet network, I ask people to, list their questions that they wanted me to ask Selko. And we had an incredible response. And they're great questions. And some of them were duplicates, so I didn't really change them. But if two questions were very close, I just picked one. I told everyone that I would mention possibly their first name or their last name so they can possibly get credit, or their pseudonym name. And so if you don't mind to start the show, Selko, if you would just kind of give us, I label you as an SHTF expert. And I think you're the only one I've heard of. There's just a few others, but you are the expert. Can you kind of tell us what makes you the expert? And I know you'll be humble and everything, but just tell us why you're the expert.
Yes. A lot of people called me expert for survival. I don't really like word expert, and I'm not trying to be here falsely humble. I know very good how good I am, if that makes sense. But board experts suggest that you can answer everything. And I cannot answer everything. And whoever told you that he can help you in every situation cannot, because every situation is very specific. Now, what can I do is I can give you, let's say, direction, and in that direction, to that direction, you can work with your specific situation. Now, what make me this, again, so-called expert is that I lived through civil war for 4 years exactly, and that that was really a civil war in Europe, and this that's something really as close as it can be to some real shit hit the fan situation. And during that civil war, I survived for 1 year in a siege city, without any working services, without electricity, food, water. So every topic that a survival is today discussing about survival, for example, trade, militias, gangs, and everything, I lived through that. So probably that things, actually may make me expert. But to continue this or to go a step before this, I also lived through communistic and socialistic society, so I know how that looks. And after the war, I live and still living actually is in kind of corrupt, absolutely corrupt society, where you need to dig through the situation and in order to achieve something through corruption and a network of known people, if this makes sense. So if you combine all of this, I think that all make me a survival expert, and I can point out to people what is really important and what is really false and myth, because there are a whole bunch of survival myths outside, and people really believe in those myths because there are not too many people talking about real stuff. I guess that's the reason why there are so many myths outside. I think this explains a bit why I am so-called expert and what I went through.
Yes. And so Selko has three books on Amazon. One is called The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival. And it's kind of nice. It's got a warning graphic sign on the front of it. Another book is STH Survival Stories, and the last one is STHF Survival Boot Camp. And his website, you guys, I just want to mention this at the beginning so you guys can have the details. His website is shtfschool.com, shtfschool.com. That is his website. So now that we got his books, go in there, buy his books. His books is the first one I mentioned, The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival. It literally has a warning label on it. I would say that some preppers probably shouldn't read. Everyone needs to read it, but I'm not sure if everyone can handle that book. So, well, thanks for being with us. I'm going to get right into some of our members' questions. And first, we're going to start off with a friend of mine, Echo Papa. That's his call sign. He said his questions are, he's got a couple questions. Of course he does. But compare Gaza to your experience. What can we learn about the current day siege going on in Gaza to kind of maybe what you went through?
Good question. If we take out good and hard question, because some of the things here. First, you need to take out completely sides from this answer, or who do you support over there, or what is really politically happening over there, who have right, who have wrong. Take that completely out from the picture. And then answer is yes. You can learn a lot from that situation. And then when you take all these things that I mentioned out, answer is really simple. You can learn a lot because of very simple reason. There are a whole bunch of people over there, and there are so little resources. So as a result, you have people fighting for resources. I wasn't there, but I'm 99.9% sure that on ground you have militias who control distribution of food and who actually ruled because of that distribution of food. I wouldn't go so much deeper inside because you're going to then have people who will discuss, oh, they are right, they are wrong. But Gaza is perfect example how a real SHDF look on the ground. And just take first and simplest reason why, as I mentioned, there are much more people than resources over there. If you imagine, I need to point this out because it is important. If you imagine that over there is absolute chaos, because situation is bad, I'm pretty much sure it is not chaos, because a really important lesson about survival is this. No matter how bad situation is on the ground, you will never have full, vacuum in ruling. There is always somebody going to be in force, in rule over there, even with those bits of resources. So you always have somebody who is ruling between and among those ruins, and those rulers are taking care about distribution, those small bits mm-hmm. of resources, and you need to count on that. Now, let's forget Gaza situation for a moment and let's transfer it to some other region, wherever that region is. If something serious happened, you will not have a truly and real Mad Max situation with strange haircuts. You're always going to have some kind of, let's say, government. You can call it militia, you can call it gang, you can call it whatever. But those guys will have to, will want and try to impose a rule and their kind of law and rule over the distribution of resources and probably over the distribution of their kind of safety and security. So we'll have to deal with those guys, not necessary to deal with trying to overtake them because they're going to have force, but they'll deal in order of some kind of cooperation with those kind of structure. If this makes sense to you, I hope this answers the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say, and I don't know, but probably places like Kiev is probably going through some, I mean, there's people in Kiev going through some of the same survival situations maybe that you went through in Bosnia as well, because it's desperate there as well.
Yes. I went actually, Kiev would be a pretty good example. It is pretty much same like these other 3 years of my wartime experience. You have constant shelling, lack of normal resources, and actually your own government is having some kind of, well, let's say not normal rule. It is wartime rule.
Right.
So you can expect it to be mobilized or drafted, if that's the same name, at any time. And again, with danger of being misunderstood here, you are having a lot of, let's say, a lot of crooked people on the rule, because in any wartime, those kind of people will emerge and take situation, take some kind of rule. Now, how bad situation is, if it is really bad and worse, you're going to have more of those people. If rule is still some kind of organized wartime rule, you will have less of those people, but those people will be there. If you look from the distance, all looks, let's say, patriotic, noble, and cool. If you are there, a picture is maybe not so cool for, I'm talking here about common folks on the ground, mm-hmm. common family. It is not so shiny and cool. It can't be. It is real life.
Okay, next question is from Casey Tango. He's asking, how many times did you have to move in the time frame that you were, you know, you were in under siege there in the city? And was there ever a safe place that you called home base in a sense? And that was, you stayed there like the longest period of time. It was the safest. And it was it in a building? Just give us details of where, or did you constantly move around?
I stayed for the almost 1 year in same building. It was family house, big, large family house. And we, let's say, rearrange it because we couldn't afford to heat whole home and to defend whole home. So out of that huge family house, we probably rearrange it for 35 to 40%. We kind of cut off 40% of house and not use it because it was hard to keep it heated clean, and it was hard to defend it. And less of the house we use for almost 1 year. If you ask me how often I moved almost every day in gathering resources and other stuff. But that was my home for a bit less of the year. That house was my home. And I didn't use it in original size and use. It was pretty much repurpose. Let's call it repurpose for the matter of safety, heating, and keeping it clean.
Okay. Mama D Bear, I like some of these names we got here. She asked, how could you ever tell who the enemy was? Was there a symbol? Was there a gang sign? Who did you know who was friend or enemy? Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
It was different through the different part of the war. I can say that in the first period of, well, that period lasts for many months. In the first period of everything, you couldn't actually say. Especially, you couldn't say on easy way who is enemy, because again, when resources are low, everybody is possibly your enemy, because everybody wants resources from you. Later, different groups, different militias, and different armies use different markings, different signs. But even that can be misunderstood, because, for example, different groups of units use just simple piece of cloth on their wrapped around their arm. But again, if they want to fool around, they use their enemy piece of cloth color. So you wasn't sure in any time. You see that today in Ukraine over there, they use same thing, and I guess armies always use similar markings, but it can be misunderstood. To answer what lady actually wanted to know, you didn't know for sure, especially in the beginning periods of events. So that's actually is a reason why you need to be prepared from the part of prepping, from the part of preps inside your home, because in any serious event, you need a bit of time to get information who is who outside and what is really happening. And if you need to go outside on the second day to get food or to get medicine for your kid, that's not a good idea, because you don't have clear idea who is who outside. So one of the points of prepping is to have enough stuff inside your home until you figure out on safe way who is who outside. You will figure out that for sure, but that figuring out is one of the most dangerous period of SHTF. So do not just go outside to finish task in the beginning period of SHTF until you figure out who is who.
You know, I'm kind of glad you said that, because I've been, you know, I'm not an HTF expert, but just thinking through situations, interviewing people in Argentina, people like yourself, and books I've read, is when the SHTF happens, the best thing to do is just hide. Bunker down and hide as long as you can until a few things settle out in the community. Leaders will happen. But if you're going to go out in the first few days, like, no one knows who's, you know, friend or foe. You just don't know. And it sounds like you kind of agree with the idea of just the more you bunker down, the less likely you're going to get killed.
Well, it is very clear in any kind of really chaotic situation, especially in chaotic situation when people realize that there is no law and punishment from system is coming back for a long time. In any situation like that, a certain kind of people emerge, criminal elements, of course. Why? Because they are going to loot and riot outside, take whatever they can take from the shops, from the mall, from the gas station. So in that beginning period of event, you don't want to be wandering out if you do not want to join them. And again, that's also a bad idea to join them if you are talking about common folks. I mean, most of the people who listen to me are common folks, not criminals. So I'm talking about them. Okay. Don't go out and loot for stuff, no matter how attractive that can be. And it can be attractive. I have been there. So I'm talking this from the experience. It is really, really attractive to go out and to get stuff that you need. Don't go that. Be prepper. Have that stuff before and stay put, or watch from the safe distance what is going on and who is who. Stay put, stay small in that beginning period until you figure out who is who. And you cannot stay put if you do not have everything that you need inside your home. Right. And again, if you are prepper, you should have everything what you need inside your home for at least 1 month, let's say.
Yeah. Okay. So I got three people kind of asked the same question, Swamp Rap, Philip, and Mama D. They said, how many people were in your group? How many people left your group? And how many new people came? Did you allow new people to come into your group?
All the people that were in my group were family, blood connected, if you understand.
Okay.
It was changing group from the beginning of the event to the last days of the event, and I can say, as far as I remember, it was from 8 to 15 people. 15 people. Most of the time, it was around, I believe, 13 people. We did welcome people in the group, but again, all the folks over there were connected with blood, and blood connection here is kind of, I would say, strong, and it was much stronger in those days. So it wasn't really if somebody is your close relative, you are welcoming him in those times, and that was not question. So inside those group of people in that time, it was not about what kind of skills they have. It was about their relatives, and that's it.
Okay. Yep. So we have one lady. She's fascinated with hygiene. And she wants to know. She's got two basic questions here. So 13 people is the number. How did you find enough water for 13 people? And then how did you guys handle sewage and waste from the people?
Yeah, sure. River was pretty much close. So two basics, source of water, river and rain through the roof gutters. Now, this may sound like cool and enough for you. Most of the time, it wasn't enough. So levels of hygiene were low. For most of the time, were low. And if you put it in today's perspective, it was awful. But yeah, we survived. For the question of human waste, close to our home, we just built, how do you call that, outside latrine, if that makes sense to you. And it was pretty much rudimentary type of latrine. And that's it. It is not good to be obsessed with anything, but it is good to mention these things and to ask this question, because people usually do ask about weapon and do not ask about hygiene. So I give you an example. I have another member of my family group. For many, many times we have diarrhea problems, for example, which would for days. We had that many times as a result of poor hygiene, poor food, poor water, not clean water. Mm-hmm. And that would, if you put it in today's perspective, okay, diarrhea is nothing bad. If you, it goes for a couple of days and that's it. If you put it in that perspective, it cripple you for days. You don't have proper or any kind of medication, and you cannot perform any of activities, duties. So you cannot go and collect firewood. You cannot stand on the door if you need to protect something. You cannot do anything. So simple diarrhea will cripple you and actually can kill you in those times. So proper hygiene is very important. So it is not good to be obsessed, but it is good to ask these questions.
Yes. Beth G, she's obsessed. So she's got one more question here.
Okay.
Did you take showers or bath in the river, or what did you do to get clean, or did you just not get clean?
Most of the time showering was while it was during the heavy rain, while we were collecting water. So that was shower. Any other, let's say, so-called shower was spraying with water and using a piece of cloth. So in other words, using small amounts of water and piece of cloth, or using a river as a cleaning in purpose of cleaning your body was possible, but not really smart, because we could go on that river only during the nighttime, and it wasn't so safe even the nighttime to use it for a bath, just quickly collecting the water. During the day, it was pretty much open ground to get killed from the snipers. So it couldn't be used during the daytime. We were dirty. We were not prepared in any way. In any other way, we were not prepared, if we are talking about prepared from the terms of today's survivalists or preppers. So even in that field of hygiene, we didn't have stash. We didn't have stash of shampoos, soaps, alcohol. We didn't have stash of that. We used what we have on our hands, and I guess that was enough. But that wasn't even close to the prepping that we mentioned today.
Right. Okay. One last question she has, and I hesitate at asking it, but I will. What did females do for their hygiene?
If I understand correctly, question, I believe I do. Any other part for any other part, other parts that goes together with just like male hygiene, they did same for the part that is different for ladies. They use cloth. Uh-huh. Pieces of cloth. I think the lady asked that kind of questions.
Yes.
Question. Yes. Yeah. I kind of hesitate to answer it, but it was like that.
So like that. The takeaway from that is you better have some hygiene products when you go into war. Okay.
Awesome. Definitely. I often say maybe I'm wrong, but I often say. Sickness and poor hygiene kill more people than bullets. Mm. I often say that in order to portray how important is that, because not everything is in guns, ammo, and tough guys. Between shooting, there is a lot of space when you still need to take care about ordinary stuff. Don't forget about ordinary everyday stuff.
Okay, I think either in your books or your training or even in the last podcast, you mentioned that that people, when they go to get water, they were being sniped. Snipers were all around. The question is, who were the snipers? And then if the snipers shot someone and they're laying on the street, did anyone clean that up, or was that the body there for months on end until someone dragged it off the street, or how? Mm-hmm.
In my case, and in any other case in this whole country, actually in wartime, open areas. Because lines through the lines between enemy armies, between armies, are usually went through the open areas through the cities. So this place where river was close, let's say close to our home, was really open area, and we can call it like what's the English phrase? No man's land, I think.
Okay.
We can call it like that. So it was fairly visible for enemy army snipers. I will not use here names or any armies or anything. No need for that. Sniping on the open areas was usually a reason for sniping civilians who are taking water or any other resources, was to impose fear and horror. Civilians could get feeling that they are nowhere safe. You have that in any war. In my case, that army, that river was open area and kind of a no man's land. We could approach it, we could use it, but it was open ground. So if soldier up on the hill felt that he is in the mood for killing a civilian lady who's collecting water, he will do that. And often it was often do like that. Not always, but soldiers, you often do that.
Okay. So another question from David Wills here is barter items. So when you guys convened in this house, at what point did you guys start using items to barter? Was that even on your mind, or was just survival on your mind?
Pretty soon, as I remember, understood. People realized that money is no good, or in the beginning period of that money is not good. In the beginning period of that money was still good, but at a ridiculously rate. So, example: if something cost before the war $1, I'll use dollar here. In that period, it would cost $50. So when people ask, but could you use money? Yes, but at the ridiculously high rate. So people realize that money is getting worthless up to the moment when it become worthless completely. Certain type of foreign money could be used because people, powerful people, had connection to take that money out and to use it at the normal rate. But even that foreign money, for example, dollars or in that time German marks, as I remember, even that money was very rates were absolutely high. So eventually people figure out that trade is work kind of best. Either people spend their money pretty fast on that ridiculously high rates, or either people, which was less, I think, either people didn't want to spend their money at all, foreign money, they just did the trade. How we started, nobody like announced it. People just started to use trade, item for items. How that trade works. From one side, we didn't have anything like open market. It wouldn't be safe to have a whole bunch of items on one place, I think. And from the other side, it started through the known people. So, if you live in a city for years, you know, some people better. More or less, you know some people, so you ask, you make connection with people. Of course, that didn't work always good. Often people would get robbed or even killed, but it worked on that way by building a connection with people and getting information who have what to trade. So if you had stash of, I don't know, homemade I think you called it moonshine, homemade moonshine. It was custom. It is custom here to make homemade moonshine. Okay. So if you have like 50 liters of that, you could easily trade it for something else. And this is only example. Over the time, if you build a kind of, you build network of, let's say, trusted people that you could trust with information who have what, or that you could trust that you can go to his place of meeting and to trade with him.
Okay. So did gold and silver, were they just too valuable, or did people just not have access to it? Was that a barter item? Because a lot of people in America, that you know, they'll save silver coins and gold coins for barter. And you know, I would think my in the beginning, gold and silver meant nothing. Food and bullets meant everything.
Oh, it is. People ask that very often, and I know that a lot of preppers, especially in US, put a lot of their effort and let's say hope in that. Silver coins, gold coins, value that they will be able to trade that, let's say, normally when something serious happened. It didn't work like that. And I think it will not work like they imagine in any future serious event. It did work to some extent. I'll give you an example. If you needed something really bad in those times, you could always, even in that chaos, you could always find people who had, let's say, some kind of medicine. Because in any kind of event, unless we are talking about complete apocalypse, in any kind of event, there are going to be people who have enough power to get something for you. But it will not be like rate that you imagine. Rates of everything were changed in that time. So I'll give you an example again. Gold coin, and you could buy, let's say, 50 cans of meat or before SHTF. With that gold coin, you could buy 20 cans of meat when SHTF started. Why? Well, from the simple reason, because those cans of soups become more important than gold. And even that rate can be even worse if you need something really hard and that item is really scarce, some medicine, and some man has medicine. Then he dictate your price. I do not believe in some kind of system where you going to have, let's say, some kind of stable ratio between gold and gold coins or whatever gold and other immediately usable items, if it makes sense. You're going to be able to use that coins, but not at the ratio or rate or what's the word that you imagine. It is going to be much more expensive to use it. Now, to add to this, I do believe in having gold and silver and those types of items. If I can go a bit further with this answering this question, I do believe in that, but from the two bit different points. First point is this: you need to have small valuable items, especially for the beginning of SHTF, and with that items you're going to be able to do bribe, like small gold rings, small gold items. But nothing exclusively. Like, I'll give you this. If you're going running from something in that chaotic times and you are going to be stopped, for example, at the checkpoint from whatever guys, and they are checking you and they are not letting you out. Now, are you going to offer to those guys some kind of specific gold coin? Or you are going to offer to that guy your ring that you take off from your finger? What will make more sense? If you offer that specific gold coin, this guy probably going to ask you, oh, what is this? This is cool. Do you have this more?
Right.
If you offer gold ring from your finger and you said, listen, man, this is my wedding ring. Take it and let me and my family go. He will not ask you, do you have more wedding rings? In your stash. He probably will believe you. This is like very rudimentary example, but you get me where I'm going with this. You need to have small valuable items, but make it simple. Make it everyday gold bracelets, ring, stuff like that. Just for getting things sold quickly in some situation. I have that too. From the other side, if you have everything else sold in terms of prepping and stash and everything, invest in gold coins, invest in silver coins, yes, but consider that investment for the as a value for the times where some kind of system jump in back, some kind of normal system jumping back, so you can still have preserved value in that gold. Does this make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Yes, absolutely.
So do not have gold coins, of course, if you solve everything else, but do not expect that you're going to solve a lot of problems with that stuff during the event. Mm-hmm. Because I went through that. I'm talking this from my personal experience. I think most of my family valuables from the point of gold and jewelry went out from the went out for the food at the ridiculously low ratio. I don't even remember but it was like 50 times less probably. It was ridiculously low. Why? Because we were forced. We couldn't eat a gold chain or gold bracelet. So have it for the times when those gold will have value. So one day in 3 months, 3 years, or 30 years, if system go back, normal system, there is going to be value in that. And that's good.
Yep.
But for other stuff, consider small valuable items, small rings, small bracelets for solving quick and dangerous situations, if that makes sense.
Yes. Uh-huh. So I'm going to combine two questions here, and thank you for answering these things. Philip Tompkin and a person named GD, they have the kind of the same question, but in different ways. So one asks the best barter items, and the other asks top 10 items to have. And I would think that that list is very similar of the top things that to have during all this to store. So we know food, you know, weight, water, all this stuff. But for you, what were the top barter items? Because I would think the top barter items are the top items you wish you had as well.
Yes. First, it bit changed over the time. So it wasn't same item all the time. I guess it was influenced from importance of items or from the black market income, if that makes sense to you.
Okay.
Weapon ammunition in my time, MREs. I'm not really sure why we really like MREs, because it was everything packaged in small package, and it is meal ready to eat. It was ready to eat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's valuable. Alcohol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, alcohol probably were on third place. I need to mention small items that people do not mention often, but I remember ridiculous situation, lighters. Mm-hmm. I remember people going, like 150 years ago, going 500 meters or 1 kilometer to borrow a piece of burning wood.
Mm-hmm.
So they can bring it home and start fire. I don't know. I guess not too many people have more than few lighters at home. So over the time, lighters were cool item. You could always trade or sell lighter. Even you could always trade and sell flint for lighters. Even that, or you could always sell filling the lighter. Somebody give me a lighter, I will fill you, and you could always sell that. Maybe it was particularly my situation, but again, do not forget those small everyday items. After this, I think I need to mention some of the luxury for us luxury items, but in same time comforting items. For example, chocolate or beer. Mm. There used to be people who want to feel, I guess, like a human person for half hour. So they wanted one beer or they wanted chocolate. Some kind of luxury item, I guess, you would sit down and drink beer and feel a bit normal again. I completely forget here antibiotics. Antibiotics would go high on the lists, on the list, and hygiene items. Now, all of this you need to combine and to think that it is not same at the beginning of the period of the event and 3 months into the event. And I think it will be same wherever event is happening. For example, consumption, intake of alcohol, spending of alcohol was much higher a couple of months later than at the beginning. And I guess it makes sense why. In the beginning period, people think everything was temporary, and after a couple of months, alcohol was, well, again, think that you could use to forget situation outside for a bit. Right. How many items are mentioned here? Let me go back again. Ammunition, weapon, antibiotics, hygiene items, comfort. I call it comfort items, and that can be wherever, whatever is go for your region. It can be tea for you.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Well, go for every day, for everything that you spend today, go for that. Everything will be, this is like top items, but everything will be that you're spending today, you'll be missing and you can trade off. Fuel, any kind of fuel that you have in that time was valuable. It was different in different period of time. In the beginning period of times when fuel station, gas station were out, but when you still could use fuel, you could get a lot for one canister of fuel. Later it was used mostly for let's say for fire, if that makes sense, so it was less valuable. Gold, in some period of time, in the beginning period of time, there used to be people that I guess again black market was working, and people in power who had connection to the outside world are being smart and just juice the people out from the gold at ridiculously low amount of ratio. After that, gold was, well, it was out of the story when it was juiced from the people, if this makes sense. I hope this answer your, yes, your,
oh,
question.
Yeah, absolutely. So my
thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.